ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another edition of the Corner Store Podcast. Grateful to have you here. I'm your host, Kevin Koval. And always, you know, I'm so happy that you're tuning in. I want to encourage you, if you've not already, to rate and subscribe. But also, we had a kerfuffle recently with Apple Music. And so I think that there might be two Corner Store streams. So the one that you should be looking for is the Corner Store. And it says my name, Kevin Koval, on it. And please rate and subscribe and tell a friend. Today, we have someone who I'm so excited to talk with. Not only an incredible artist in her own right, a musician, a composer, a songwriter, but also the president and owner of Delmark Records, which, for those that don't know, is the longest running jazz and blues label, continuously running jazz and blues label in the United States. They have a rich history across the globe of putting out some of the most important sounds that really have shaped the way we think of music. I'm thrilled to have her in the Corner Store. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome Julia Miller. Hi.
Hi, thank you so much for inviting me. I'm really honored to be here.
No, thank you. I'm grateful to have you. And I kind of want to, you know, we're going to go all over the place. And I wonder if just a good place to start is if you could just tell us a little about what you do and what you do kind of day to day. And I know, obviously, we are in a pandemic and that day to day, you know, maybe looks different. But what do you do and what's your day to day like?
Well, yes, my day-to-day looks a lot different because of the pandemic, for sure. We were in, we came into Delmark in May of 2018, so we're 2.5 years in now. And at that time, it was a 65-year-old business, and we're looking forward to its 70. So we're in the middle of a 5-year arc. Mm-hmm. And what I've been trying to say to people and sort of to explain it is that we had this 5-year arc that we had sort of planned, and then the pandemic hit, and all the kind of unusual political situation that we have in this country hit, and everything. And so we did the pivot. We did the COVID pivot. And so my day-to-day looks different now than it did even in earlier in this year, and certainly than it did last year at this time, and even as it did then when we first came in 2018.
No, of course. And what is the COVID, when you say COVID pivot, like how have you all pivoted? What does that mean for Delmark? What does that mean for you guys?
Well, Delmark was essentially a paper business with some computerization, and we really made it into a digital business. We've increased the number of tracks online from about 1,000 to more than 10,000. Wow. And we've really centralized the business. And we're working on archiving everything too, which is amazing and huge here. We have so much, you know, to take care of. So we've made the operations, we work all the time on making the operations more smooth and work together more from a central hub, so that we can stay in business in this world that is now digital. People are working from home, people working remotely. You know, this building is a 6,000 square foot building. We have the studio here, we have the warehouse here. It's a sort of a vintage business, and we kept that, but we're not here all of us all the time because of COVID, of course.
Right.
So we have our operations, our warehouse manager here, and we can, because even during the pandemic, that was essential. Shipping is an essential. It's allowed.
Right.
And then I would come and go, and we wear masks and sanitize everything and do social distancing.
Of course.
And then mostly everybody else works from home. And so we've been working on establishing, you know, a whole new computer upgrade system so that really facilitates the working from home. So a lot of my day to day is like systems admin, but
right.
it comes from my composing background, I think, because I did so much, you know, it's like weaving this huge orchestral score out of this business, you know?
It's a lot. And you guys are really bringing Delmark into the new century. And I want to talk about what it's been a little, just for those that don't know, kind of, I mean, Delmark has such an incredible roster. You said recently you've gone electronically from 1,000 to 10,000, which I imagine is just a drop in the bucket of what is, you know, of what y'all's discography is, and how many records you guys have. But you guys have put out, you know, just to music in Chicago, you know, of course, and beyond. But you guys have put out many records from the Association of the Advancement of Creative Musicians. You've put out Roscoe Mitchell's records. You've put out, you know, Little Walter. Paint a picture of you know, why this label is really so iconic and so tied to, you know, the greatest sounds that, you know, this city and maybe the world has ever produced.
Well, today, for example, I needed to go and research an album by Malachi Thompson, which was also in a folder next to an album by Anthony Braxton. So if you open up the folder, which is folder 420 for Alto, that, which is an iconic record, an iconic release, and an early release of Braxton's, you can open up this folder and find dedications to John Cage and dedications to amazing artists of the day and other composers, other musicians. And every folder is like that. The archive, and as well as the releases, a piece of history across the board, in all genres of music, blues, jazz, experimental music, improvisation and creative improvisation. It's just an amazing archive, and we work daily on preserving it and also getting it out there so that people can really hear it and listen to it.
Yeah, no, that's, you guys have, I mean, it's amazing the amount and the amount of just incredible music you guys have. So I do want to talk about taking over a business and kind of bringing it up into the new world. But before that, how do you even get into the music? How do you get involved in the music as a maker, I imagine, before a entrepreneur and before a business owner?
Yes. Well, I was I went to music school. I have a DMA in composition from Northwestern, and I have degrees in composition and guitar performance from Northwestern and DePaul.
Yeah.
So I came to Chicago in the late 80s to go to music school at DePaul, which, you know, at that time, the campus was in a really different, was kind of the old Lincoln Park, you know?
Yeah.
And I could walk to the blues clubs. I walked, you know, to Wise Fools. I loved to go and hang out at Wise Fools and sing at the jam sessions and open mics there when I was like 18, you know?
Yeah.
And so I came here for that. And then when I went to graduate school, I started thinking about what that would mean, like what my business life or what my professional life would be. And one of my professors asked me what I thought I would be doing, and I said, well, I thought I wanted to start a record label. And I always say that, you know, it just took me like 25 or 30 years to do it.
Yeah.
But, you know, but I also, I've thought about this a lot, because, you know, you go back in retrospect, you think about, well, if you'd taken this road or if you'd turned this way, what, you know, how would your life be different or what would you do? And I've wanted to do this since I was, you know, 13. I mean, I've always been a musician. I've always kind of listened in a way that's like all about the music business. And I never really thought of that until I thought about, you know, I sort of examining myself and thinking, well, why did I end up in this place? And then you start putting it together and you start thinking, oh, well, yes, this isn't, you know, there are a lot of things that I used to do and that I grew up doing that lead right into this. You know, my family has had family businesses, not in music, but in family businesses for many, many years. And I was very influenced by that.
What did they do? Realize. What did they do? Your folks or your family? What kind of business?
My family had manufacturing businesses, and sort of they would take it. My grandfather had a machine and tooling business, and he would build and make tools for like all the local farmers and fix things for them. Which I think is great.
Yeah,
it's
amazing.
Like such a creative, you know, it's like an abandoned practices kind of thing. You know, you make, somebody needs the tool and you make it for them.
That's,
you know,
right.
That's,
wow.
Like the best thing.
Wow.
And yeah. And then that evolved into a much larger manufacturing business that went through different, you know, eras of its own. And I kind of grew up in that. And I always said I was never going to do it. And here I am, you know, I don't know. I guess you just can't escape, you know.
Yeah. A kind of destiny almost. You know?
Your history or whatever.
Yeah. No,
but,
certainly.
You know, I mean, I definitely like this one. Something I really like about Del Mar is that it's a vintage warehouse. You know, you go through and it's almost like an installation. I mean, I may be kind of strange to think about it like that, but it's definitely something like as a piece of history outside of the important archival aspect and the musical aspect that is a really important kind of business history. So then, how do you take that and retain it or document it, but then also keep it alive? Mm. You know, it's not a museum. It's
right.
Living.
Right. Yeah.
So,
absolutely living. Yeah. Yeah. Because I guess they do not, these kinds of businesses they don't get made anymore, in part because the music, the way it's distributed, is so different now.
Yeah. It doesn't get made anymore. Although I have to say, getting to know, different vendors and business owners, I think there's a small business ownership in Chicago, that community is really thriving.
Yeah.
The sort of DIY community is really thriving, and I think that's great. You know, we just released a new jazz record by the Bradfield Goldberg Hall Trio, Jeff Bradfield, and that was really a Chicago designed project, and it was also in production with Smash Plastic, which is a Chicago business. It was mixed, mastered, recorded here. Designer Son and Zimmer were the designers, so you have this really nice group of people working together, and I think that's really exciting. I think it's really creative too, and it's also really healthy.
Yes, yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, collaboration is inherent in all of these creative industries, and certainly then in, you know, when it dips into the entrepreneurial or business side of things, that's great. You said you came to Chicago, so where did you come from?
I grew up in a small town in Michigan, really small town.
Yeah, where in Michigan?
Near Battle Creek and sort of central southern Michigan.
Okay, sure. Yeah, I know that area. So
little town there.
Yeah. So in a little town, a in Michigan, how does a young white woman, a young white girl, I guess, then get the blues and jazz? Like, how are you kind of dipping into the music? And like, what did your people think of that? I mean, was that a cool thing at that time, or was that ever contentious? And I get this question a lot because I'm a white kid who loves and got involved in hip hop as a kid, and so I'm also just very interested. Is like, you know, how does that happen? Because of segregation in this country, you know, sometimes it, you know, a kind of crossing is difficult, made difficult, and so I'm curious about that experience for you.
Well, I have been a guitarist all my life. I started asking for a guitar when I was 5, and. And my parents got me a guitar, like, for when I was about 7 and a half, finally, because I wouldn't stop asking. And they thought it was really, like, bizarre. Not a lot of people in my family really played music. It wasn't, like, an influence or anything. I was just like, guitar, 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 I want a guitar. And
so, why do you think that was?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I just always had a very clear memory. I have very clear memories of wanting to play the guitar.
Wow.
I have very clear memories of wanting to play classical music on the guitar, which is even weirder because at a, you know, like 8, 9, 10 years old, I'd never even seen a classical guitarist. How would I know? But I really remember it, and I asked for guitar lessons, and that's what I did. And I did also songwriting too. I did a lot of singer-songwriting as a teenager, primarily because in a small town, you though there weren't bands like there are now, and or there were bands, but there were like older dudes that were in bars, and they had wanted really nothing to do with a teenage girl, you know. And I couldn't go in the bars and sing with them anyway. There was not a scene or anything like that. So I would do singer songwriter things. I also played the clarinet, and I played the clarinet really seriously. I had a better clarinet teacher than I did a guitar teacher at that time. And like I studied at a local college. And so I progressed really quickly. Yeah. And I played in orchestra. I played in college orchestras. My cousin, who was actually at the age of my mother, so he's like my second cousin, was a Dixieland clarinetist. And he actually, this is interesting, he had a whole basement full of records. And I know he had a ton of Del Mar records, although I never put it together.
Right, wow.
At the time, I put it together like much later. I was like, oh, wow, that's, that, you know, there's a connection here.
Yeah.
And I could play with him in like circus bands. There are pictures of me being like 15 in a circus band with this guy. Wow. in like a ring. And so I had a very unusual musical
upbringing,
very specific music upbringing, but not because, I don't know why. I mean, I don't think you can really say why, you know. It just was, I just always wanted to do it. So
yeah. Incredible. No, it's, I mean, you're, yeah, it's interesting just how, I don't know if there are a ton of people that get to follow, their passion in that way, or their, you know, the, what's really calling them, you know. This sounds like a calling for you. And, I feel as a writer, I feel similarly, you know, blessed in some ways, privileged to be able to kind of follow my calling in that way. And it seems like, you know, this has been something that's been inside of you for a very long time. I mean, forever.
Yeah, it really has. And so to sort of step back, I don't think I really answered your question. You had how like specifically about the blues.
Yeah.
You know, I honestly, until I did some improvising as in high school, like simple improvising. I came to Chicago to go to classical guitar school, to go music school, and then I discovered blues clubs, and then. And I just discovered them more socially. It kind of grew when I started improvising more in my mid 20s. And after graduate school, then I started doing blues jam sessions. I did some. My improvising went more towards experimental jazz or experimental improvising, but I did blues jazz sessions, and I liked them. And so I had, you know, definitely an experience. And also I met blues musicians at Rosa's years before I got involved with Rosa's in any kind of business way.
Yeah. Who were some of the musicians that first kind of caught your attention? Like who, some of the folks who stood out to you?
Well, I did a blues jam session at Eddie Clearwater's club, Reservation Blues. When that was in Wicker Park.
Yeah.
And I did, what are some of the other things? You know, later on I played at Elastic. I played at, I worked a lot with the Experimental Sound Studio. I remember the jazz showcase at the Blackstone Theater.
Yeah.
And going and seeing, I think I saw Cedar Walton at the jazz showcase.
Nice.
Yeah. And so it there were many, many, many local Chicago musicians.
Right. I mean, Chicago's just an incredible scene. I mean, kind of the scene in a lot of ways for, I think, jazz and blues and maybe, yeah, the arts, really. I mean, I wave the flag always, and I'm a Chicago centrist, but dang, like in you know, blues, jazz, soul, you're hard pressed to find a better city, I think.
Yeah, definitely, and especially even in undergrad at DePaul, you know,
great music
Charles
scene.
Charles Argerfinger was there. I think Mark Colby was there at that time.
I remember playing. with a bunch of DePaul jazz musicians in lofts along Lincoln a long time ago. And they had, you know, they had a lot of like, you know, jam sessions, and then they would invite other kinds of artists, rappers and poets, to come in and get on the mic here and there. But they were just, they were students who just got together and improvised and made, you know, really, really great, great music. And I know that they have an incredible school.
Yeah. And as when we were improvising, we would improvise at Elastic. People like Ernest Dawkins, yeah. You know, we played with, we still play with Harrison Bankhead. Edward Wilkerson was a great, great friend. We played with Tatsu Aoki recently with the Asian Improv Arts Festival.
Nice.
So these are just amazing creative musicians, and I always wanted to do. I just had a vision of things that I wanted to do, and then I kind of went and did them. And then afterwards, I thought, well, maybe I should, I don't know, have a little bit more circumspection, or be a little bit more circumspect about it. But I. What can I say? I was very impulse and inspiration driven.
Yeah. No. Of course. Yeah. I think you have to follow it in that way. So now, I mean, so you're running this label. How does that? How do you balance your own work, your own composition, your own making of music, and then also the business of running a label?
Well, it's really a challenge. It's really hard. I'm not gonna understate that. And for sure, the responsibilities of the label have taken precedence over in the past two years, because it's just been nonstop, you know. And also because we've released so much, we've had a lot of records come out, which we're happy about. But also the thing about Dalmark is that there's this balance of new releases and catalog releases, and then all of this other archive and history and art. And so, you know, it really needs a team to manage it all. But it's not, the team is, it's kind of just a couple of us.
Yeah. Yeah. How many people are at it? Yeah. How many employees do you guys have?
Well, we have a staff of about five, but then we have external accounting, and we have partners that we work with. So we work, you know, we have business partners with Stink Placement. We have business partners with accounting. We have business partners with royalties. So we don't keep all of that in-house. If we had all that in-house, we would need like between 20 and 30 employees. And the overhead for that is just not sustainable.
Right.
So we partner. That it's a little bit of a more modern business model.
Right. Yeah, of course. Of course.
Yeah. I've done some projects, especially this year. I've done some projects. A little bit of work in the studio, and I've been gradually doing more. I've been doing some engineering, which is really good for my brain. It gets me out of the office space and the office head, and into a more creative thing. And I, you know, I was faculty for 17 years at the School of the Art Institute.
Right.
And I taught studio classes, I taught tape classes, and so that whole physicality of sound and tape loops and patch bays and, you know, analog mixing boards, I love that, and I know it, and I feel very comfortable. So getting into the studio and doing that is something that I really enjoy. And it's like a breath of fresh air. And it gets me into other creative states as well. I've started writing again, too, composing again.
Yeah.
I had promised myself that I was going to do like an Instagram live guitar, you know, regular guitar broadcast, some kind of thing. And, you know, I haven't really managed to do that. And I think I still should. Improvised. There's just like even a free improv or like with guests or some kind of thing.
I think that's a great idea. I think IG fun, Live, right? Julia Miller with guests would be terrific. I think you should do that. Absolutely. No, I think that's dope. So, all right. So, what should people listen to of yours, and what are you working on that maybe we'd be able to listen to soon?
Well, we have, you know, the Volcano Radar Paquito Libre is released on Delmark. It's our CD, and we have been talking about putting that on vinyl. And we may yet do that. We also have Electro Parables, which is an electronic digital release, which is going to come out in some kind of physical form. And I'm working on string quartets, so that might happen, you know, in the coming year. And, you know, of course, listen to Jeff Bradfield Trio, listen to Johnny Iguana, listen to Lindsay Alexander, which I produced.
Yay, nice.
Lindsay,
wow.
Chicago blues man.
Congrats.
Listen to Jimmy Johnson, who's going to be 92. He's streaming we're streaming live from the studio for his 92nd birthday after Thanksgiving.
When is that? When will that be?
That will be Saturday, the 28th of November.
Great. Okay.
Live. And that's going to be... It's streaming live, but it's going to be picked up. We're co-producing it with Mojo Fest, which is a fest, blues fest in Italy. And it's going to be all streamed everywhere. So we have a lot of things going on.
Yeah, no kidding. All right.
Also, Women of the Blues is our gallery exhibit. So we have approximately 100 photos of female blues artists who are in the gallery right now, curated by Lynn-Norman Weiss. There are 25 album covers that are Delmark album covers, all women of the blues. And all of the rest are Chicago photographers, some international photographers, and women that Lynn has curated and brought together. And it's in the gallery now, but it's going to be a virtual gallery that you can see on the website as well.
Great. And where is the best place to stay in tune and to see the gallery, but also stay in tune with all of what you guys are up to?
Delmark.com.
Cool. And what about socials? Any socials?
Yep. Instagram at Delmark Records, Facebook. Those are our two main ones. I'm really on the Instagram, and LBO is really on the Facebook.
Okay.
And we may branch out into actually we're working on the YouTube as well, but we really focus on those two. We're growing them all the time.
Nice. Now, before I let you go, I know you guys have a thorough archive, but if you can tell me, what are your top five out of the Delmark archive records that you would send people to listen?
West Side Soul. West Side Soul is for blues. You know, Cole Dan Howell, Otis Rush is the first Delmark LP that I owned.
Nice.
back in the day. Four Alto, Anthony Braxton, Jimmy Forrest is a great. It's great reel to reel as well. So those are four. Let's see. How can I only choose? How can I know
like, you're not. Look, you're not beholden forever to this list.
I could say Blues Hit Big Town, Junior Wells. Those are all catalog though.
Okay.
Of course, you know. I think that you were asking kind of.
Yeah.
That.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
I mentioned some new releases.
Oh yeah, no.
Mojo Morganfield, our new digital single.
Nice. Too. Good. Nice. That's a good sixth. Julia Miller, I am grateful for your time and very grateful for your work. I'm glad that Delmark lives and will live into the forever, and excited to see you guys push it into the forever. Thank you for being in the corner store today. I appreciate you.
Oh, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. It was such a pleasure. And thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, of course.
Shout out our super producer, DJ Cashera. Big up boss man, Todd Manley. Thank you to our official corner store photog, Mercedes Zapata. Salutes to the snack door, Max. Also, please, y'all, follow our Instagram, it's corner_pod, on IG, on Twitter. Tell us who you want to see in the corner store. And also, please consider dropping a couple of dollars into our Patreon account. It's patreon.com/cornerstore_pod.
The corner store is brought to you by Stolen Spirits.